This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Warning, The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, the world's most exciting podcast, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, New York Times best-selling author and National Radio Hall of Fame inductee, Michael Savage.
Well, folks, welcome to the free Savage Nation podcast, and I'm going to keep it free for all of you. But for those of you who have been requesting that we provide for you an ad-free podcast, we're going to keep doing that. And in addition to getting the ad-free podcast, which many of you want, for less than the price of a beer in a bar a month, only $3.99 a month, you're going to get an occasional monologue from me. Maybe I'll read from one of my novels. You're going to get an archive piece going back to 1994. Whatever comes up, you're going to get on an occasional basis. Details will be seen on my website, michaelsavage.com. I'm going to give you a link right now. And if you want to join, all you got to do is go to glow.fm/savagepremium. 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 If you click on it, you're going to see a cartoon of me. Join Savage's exclusive club with the rate, and you just click and you join. You're going to love it. I appreciate it very much. I hope you join the Savage exclusive club. I want to thank you very much for supporting the Savage Nation podcast, either the free version or the paid version. Your patronage, it's appreciated. It's that simple. Thank you so much for listening. Today we're going to talk about Can You Be Happy in a Sad World? Now, many of you have heard this podcast in part before, but today it's a little different because it's mixed in with some other great things for you. It's summertime, late June. I lightened it up, but I want to begin with some corny jokes. Some of them you never heard. I never heard any of these. I laughed in a Chinese restaurant. In fact, they're so good that the Chinese guy who owns the restaurant, I read one to him, which I'm going to read to you now, and he laughed hysterically. It goes like this. A man goes to see the rabbi. Rabbi, something terrible is happening. I have to talk to you about it. Rabbi asked, what's wrong? The man replied, my wife is going to poison me. Rabbi, very surprised by this, says, how can that be? The man then pleads, I'm telling you, I'm certain she's going to poison me. What should I do, Rabbi? The rabbi then offers, I'll tell you what, let me talk to her. I'll see what I can find out, and I'll let you know. A week later, the rabbi calls the man and says, I spoke to your wife on the phone for 3 hours. You want my advice? The man said, yes. And the rabbi said, take the poison. Rim shot. Okay. It was funny. The Chinese owner laughed hysterically. So you better laugh. Here's another one. We're just lightening it up today. John was on his deathbed and gasped pitifully. Give me one last request, dear, he said. Of course, John, his wife said softly. 6 months after I die, I want you to marry Bob. But I thought you hated Bob, she said. With his last breath, John said, I do. A man goes to a shrink and says, doctor, my wife is unfaithful to me. Every evening she goes to Larry's bar and picks up men. In fact, she sleeps with anybody who asks her. I'm going crazy. What do you think I should do? Relax, says the doctor. Take a deep breath and calm down. Now, tell me, exactly where is Larry's bar? I think these came from the Catskill Mountains. These are funny. I mean, they're very misogynistic, I have to admit. But you know what? If you're a mean-faced, clipped-haired man-hater, just go away and leave us alone. Let us have a good laugh tonight, because we can do without you. Three friends from the local congregation were asked, when you're in your casket and friends and congregation members are mourning over you, what would you like them to say? Artie said, I would like them to say I was a wonderful husband, a fine spiritual leader, and a great family man. Eugene commented, I would like them to say I was a wonderful teacher and servant of God who made a huge difference in people's lives. Al said, I'd like them to say, look, he's moving.
Wow.
Women and cats will do as they please, and men and dogs should relax and get used to the idea. Some of them are not funny. Here's one for all of you. Here, for all you hardcore MAGA people, the reason politicians try so hard to get reelected is that they would hate to have to make a living under the laws they have passed. Bang. Because they had no reservations at a busy restaurant, my elderly neighbor and his wife were told there would be a 45-minute wait for a table. Young man, we're both 90 years old, the husband said. We may not have 45 minutes. They were seated immediately. I don't know who writes this stuff. Who writes this stuff? I was in the six-item express lane at the store quietly fuming. Completely ignoring the sign, the woman ahead of me had slipped into the checkout line, pushing a cart piled high with groceries. Imagine my delight when the cashier beckoned the woman to come forward, looked into the cart, and asked sweetly, "So, which six items would you like to buy?" Wouldn't it be great if that happened more often? Yeah, right. Not today. I think that's it. There's one more, but I'm not going to read it. I think that's enough for you today. What was your favorite? I think my favorite is a man goes to the rabbi and says, "Yes, take the poison." Okay, folks, that's the opening. Now move on to some other happy and unhappy stuff. Right here on the Savage Nation podcast, lighten up, because things are going to get a lot worse before they get better under Biden. If you missed my interview on Newsmax TV this week, I think you're going to hear it now because, I mean, you're lucky to hear it now is what I'm trying to say. Why? It was explosive. I burned the microphone. I burned the house down because nothing to me is more sacred than children. And when I see the mean-faced, clipped hair, man-hating people behind so-called critical race theory, and I know what it is, attacking our children, and I mean our white children, mainly our white children, telling them they're evil, telling them they're no good, telling them their race is no good. If this is not bullying and shaming and child abuse, I'd like to know what is. Tell me what is. They should be arrested. Critical race theory is a misnomer to begin with. It's not critical race theory. It's anti-white race theory. More specifically, anti-white male race theory. It's anti-white male racism. The people promoting it are conducting a verbal genocide against whites and a child abuse against children. Well, you're going to hear all of it on the Newsmax TV in a little milder form. Now, this is nothing new to me. I've had visions about these people for many, many decades. Who are these people? Mean-faced, clipped-haired, man-hating, so-called feminists. They're the types that ran the concentration camps in Nazi Germany. You don't know much about this because you're brainwashed. Most of the commandants in these concentration camps were this type of woman. They were the sadistic monsters that you're now seeing running critical race theory. Now, there are states that are standing up to them. Back in the 1980s, way before radio, I wrote a fictionalized science fiction piece called Xenon, X-E-N-O-N, a futuristic nightmare that was run by this type of human beast. And many people have downloaded it from Kindle. The only place you can buy it, it was never published as a book. I've had people call it a work of genius. Publishers loved it, but they were afraid to publish it. Even when I was writing best-selling nonfiction books like Scorched Earth, Trickle Up Poverty, etc., they wouldn't touch it. They were afraid of taking on the mean-faced, clipped-hair types who were then already running publishing. Now, of course, they're also running radio now, but you don't know that as well. That's a story for another time. I will actually name names at another time. But the issue here today is the attack on our children, mainly our white children, mainly by man-hating beasts under the guise of fairness and equality. And so you're going to hear my explosive interview on Newsmax right now on Michael Savage podcast. And if you'd like to really read a nightmare of what's going to happen if these mean-faced, clipped-haired, man-hating monsters are not stopped, read my fiction called Xenon, X-E-N-O-N. You won't be disappointed. Now let's listen.
We're joined by Michael Savage. He's host of the Savage Nation podcast. Michael, great to have you back on the program. Critical race theory, I'm not a parent. I honestly didn't know much about it until we covered it quite frequently on this show. And I've learned a lot thanks to these parents, especially in Loudoun County, not far from here, that are speaking out on it. You know, can you explain for our viewers and especially for the media that is denying it, just how prevalent it is? Because from what I understand, you know, it's in some schools it's taught as CRT, in other schools it's disguised as something else.
My blood's boiling listening to Chuck Todd. I wanted to reach through the screen and smack him in the face. Does he have children? Can you imagine having a little child who goes to school and is told that he's no good, his race is no good, he's evil, his parents are evil, his nation is evil? These are the same SOBs who lectured us for 20 years about don't be a bully, tolerate everything. And now they're beating up white children in schoolrooms. And I'm not going to mince words. You can cut me off if you have to. I know you probably agree with me. I can't take this anymore. And there's only one solution to it. Sue the goddamn schools if they do it to your child for child abuse. And you will win, because that's the only way to stop this. These children are being humiliated and hurt and damaged for life by a psychotic woman who came up with this lie called critical race theory, which is nothing but racism towards white people. No other race is targeted. I could go on and I could go on and on. I've studied history. I know where this starts. I know where it ends. It started in the same kind of thing started in Germany. The Jews were no good. The Jews did this. The Jews did that. The next thing you knew, they were being excluded from swimming pools. They didn't put them in concentration camps overnight. I study this intimately. I am Jewish. I know how this starts. Attacks on white people is exactly what was done to the Jews in Germany in the 30s. Don't fall for this garbage. This is the road to the death camps. Stand up to these bastards and sue them.
Michael, to that
Other
point,
than that, I have nothing else to worry, say.
Michael, I worry sometimes that if we continue to always use the phrase critical race theory, that we might allow the left to hide, in effect. And what I mean is they'll say, no, we're not teaching CRT, but they are, in fact, teaching some other version of anti-white racism. So I'd prefer to call it anti-white racism as a term, because let's face it, no matter what flavor this takes or what shape this takes, the goal always is to shame white people, and tell them that they have inherited guilt. Your thoughts?
You said it better than I could, and I'm very emotional on this issue, because to me, children are sacred. Anyone who abuses children should have bad things done to them. And now it's being done institutionally by so-called progressives. And I know what it's doing to the children. Well, one woman has sued them. Her biracial son refused to confess his white dominance. Are you listening to this? These psychopaths. Mm-hmm. Now, I wrote about this last month when I did a podcast, Critical Race Theory is Racist, Resist, and now it's come back again. Here's a biracial boy, and they try to tell him that he's no good because he's mixed race, and he wouldn't do it. In his class, William, along with the students, were asked to publicly reveal his race, gender, religious, and sexual identities. Do you realize how psychotic this is to do this to children? Wait, and then the teacher wanted him to attach derogatory labels to those identities. And then he was asked to undo and unlearn his beliefs, attitudes, and behaviors that stem from oppression. I rest my case. If it was my child, I would sue that school. I'd make sure someone went to jail for child abuse. Now, I raised two children. I have a grandchild. If they ever did that to my grandchild, well, let's stop right here, because I will not tolerate the abuse of any children, including my own. There's nothing more to say. And you say, well, what can we do about it? Do what they've been doing for years. Sue them. That's the only language they understand. Now, you may say, what chance do we have in liberal courts? Take your chances in the courts. There's no other option right now. In these rich, ritzy schools in Manhattan, the parents are pulling the kids out of the schools. That they understand, $65,000 a year tuition. You can't do this to children. It's child abuse. To do this
Michael,
to a child.
Michael, what do you say to the parents out there who are standing up for their kids that are dealing with this in their schools, and then to those as well that are saying, hey, you know what? My kid's not being taught this. It's not happening in my school. What's your advice?
Who would say that? Who said Chuck Todd? Does Chuck Todd have children? The only child Chuck Todd has,
The only child Chuck Todd has is himself in a mirror. He's not a fully grown adult to say a thing like that. Why do you think parents are standing up? Because they're trying to protect their children from these leftist monsters, these Hitlerian monsters. And I'm using the word Hitlerian very selectively. People say you're going overboard. You lost the argument the minute you bring up Hitler. No, I didn't lose the argument. Those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it. That's not Hitler. That's Santayana, the Spanish philosopher. We are repeating history. When you start attacking a race through their children, the next step is even worse.
Michael, listen, we got to go. I totally concur, though. You're doing important work. Please keep up the fight. We cannot normalize anti-white racism, and that's what a lot of Democrats
can't.
And the
stand
media
stand up to the bully, sue
right
them.
Now.
Michael Savage, a host like no other.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Now, for those of you who've joined the Savage Nation exclusive club, which costs less than a bar drink a month, it's a special treat. I read from my novel, Abuse of Power, which was a best-selling novel at the time, my Jack Hatfield thriller series. And here's a small sample of what those on the premium paid podcast received. Jack lived and worked on a 59-foot Grand Banks yacht in the Sausalito Marina where, as if reflecting the mood of the region, the wind and tides were making some pretty ugly chop. Still, he managed to snag a few hours sleep around dawn, then watched as local and national law enforcement across the country were put on high alert and did everything they could to create the impression of ensuring the public safety. The president made an Oval Office speech the following morning reminding the country of his commitment to keeping the citizens of the United States secure and to raise his mortally wounded poll numbers, while politicos from both sides of the aisle clogged the cable news networks and talk radio with enough hot air to float a horseshoe. That bugged Jack the most. Despite the magnitude of what had happened, this is after a bombing, okay? Despite the magnitude of what had happened and the devastating scope of what had actually been avoided, the news coverage had no real depth to it, no dimension, no insight. Nothing's really changed, has it? Well, let's see. And then there's another character I introduce here on page 31 called Tony Antinori. Oh, okay, he's based on a friend of mine. So let me read to you this one. This is a nice, another yellow tab here. Page 31, Abuse of Power. I'm Michael Savage reading from my novel from 2011, Abuse of Power. Guess you didn't know I wrote novels. You wouldn't know it if you read the newspapers. What would you know? I guess you'd know that blacks are oppressed, Hispanics are coming here to work, and every white man is a Nazi. Jack had known Tony Antinori for a little over a year. But the moment he'd met the guy, they'd felt an immediate kinship, and that was the kind of compliment he didn't hand out often. A former Green Beret paratrooper, Tony had done three tours in Vietnam, had cross-trained as both a medic and a rifleman, and was still active in the National Guard, teaching combat medicine to young recruits headed to Afghanistan. He was 69 and still teaching field medicine to the young recruits. Maybe that was part of what kept him young. Hang the shame to know-it-all, out-of-shape kids less than half his age. The other part was staying in shape. Tony was solidly built, more muscle than fat, but at first glance, you'd never know that he was career military. He looked like a fugitive from a Fellini movie, his thick head of shoe-polished black movie star hair framing a tanned, creased, bearded face and wise but playful eyes. He kept his lanky 6'4" frame in shape with a brisk morning flurry of push-ups, jumping jacks, and crunches every other day. Nothing high impact, just enough to get his heart rate up and help keep his cholesterol down. He dressed younger, too, casual, mostly turtlenecks and corduroys, and he dyed his white hair black, his one concession to vanity. If he squinted, he could still find and sometimes talk to the 20-year-old who always wanted to be where he ended up. If you'd like to join, it's simple. Just click the link on michaelsavage.com. That's how you join the premium club. It's that simple. With the news getting worse and worse every day, with Biden's incompetence and anti-Americanism, the dangerous gangsters in the Democrat Party, the supine Republican Party, it's easy to fall into depression. A while ago, I did an entire podcast about the expectation of happiness in a sad world, and I'd like you to listen to some of it right now. Can we expect to be happy all the time? Of course not. And I explain how the media manipulates us into unhappiness through absurd expectations with their ads and whatnot. I talk about sorrow and what it is. I talk about which religions bring us the most happiness. The seven deadly sins, how the media glorifies these sins. Can you be happy in a sad world? I hope so. Now let's listen on the Michael Savage Podcast. Today's topic is a universal question. That's the question. How to be happy in a sad world? Or can you be happy in a sad world? Or what is happiness? It's a question, I think, that has plagued mankind, or mankind has asked from the beginning of time, going back to the first cave painting where a bored cave woman or caveman tried to make themselves happier and give their life meaning by leaving a mark of their existence on the wall of the cave. Comedians have said weird things about it. Woody Allen and Annie Hall said life is divided up into two categories, the horrible and the miserable. Horrible would be like terminal cases, blind, crippled. I don't know how they get through life. It's amazing. And the miserable is everyone else. It's funny, it's cynical, but unfortunately for some people, it's true, right? Johnny Carson, the old nighttime comedian, said, I know a man who gave up smoking, drinking, sex, and rich food. He was healthy right up to the day he killed himself. Another comedian, Henny Youngman, said, what's the use of happiness? It can't buy you money. Then there's the sarcastic, Frank Sinatra, a man doesn't know what happiness is until he's married. By then it's too late. In other words, bashing women. But philosophers have taken this problem on going back to the ancients. Every one of us listening to this show is trying to be happy by listening to this show. You're trying to get a little pleasure out of your life by getting a laugh or a little meaning, things like that, right? That's what man does, is we seek meaning, happiness, joy, whether it be the Super Bowl or attacking Donald Trump or defending Donald Trump. Seems the Democrat Party gets their happiness by attacking America while saying they're trying to save America. It seems the Republican Party gets their pleasure by doing nothing, by sitting there and sucking their thumbs. And we, the people, are stuck here in the middle. Happiness. What is happiness? How do we deal with happiness? Well, we all know that seeking happiness can lead to disaster. The media manipulates us into thinking that if we buy this or have sex with that, we'll be happy. And maybe we will momentarily, but we know it doesn't last. That's where consumerism comes in. Buy, 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 buy. That's where all the junk comes from. We all know this. Once we grow up, we reduce our expectations to a certain extent for a number of reasons, because we don't need all these things unless there's something wrong with us and we think that by buying ourselves into happiness, we're going to be happy. I don't know anyone who has, never have. Where does all this rampant drug use originate? The inability to be happy. So how am I, sitting here talking about this, going to make you happy? How? Because to me, my happiness consists of using my brain, always looking into things more deeply. Is happiness possible in this world? I get my happiness here and there. I get my knocks here and there. But you got to pick yourself up and start all over again, whether it be a disease or a personal tragedy, financial loss. What are you going to do about it? You're going to live with it. The whole world understands the fundamentals of human happiness. And it's good to talk about it. It's wonderful. And that we have the leisure to do it in our lovely great country, this great country of ours. But there are people who are starving right now somewhere on this earth, I guess. There are children who are suffering from cancer in the back wards of hospitals. So some people understand that and they get their pleasure or happiness in helping those in need, helping animals in need. And those are the good people. Let's not be cynical about everything, because without the good people, there'd be no world at all. Without those who protected nature and or the environment, if you want to call it that, we'd be living in an earth that was paved over. So the do-gooders have a place in the world, a very important place. However, when the do-gooders start to tell us how to live our lives, that's when we rebel. None of us like to be told what to do and how to live. We're not infants. We hate to be preached at. That is why today, on this podcast, I will avoid trying to preach to you. I may quote those who preach without becoming preachy. So let the games begin.
The Savage Nation. It's Savage on Demand.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Obviously, everyone listening to this podcast is looking for happiness. At this time, trying to find happiness by engaging your mind in someone else's thoughts, which can bring us happiness. But let's go back to the Constitution. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Very clever, those founding fathers. The pursuit of happiness. I've often thought about this since I'm a teenager. They never promised you happiness. They said you have the right to pursue happiness, right? Pursue happiness. Okay, well, that means it's a lifetime pursuit. So is it permanent? Do you know anyone who's ever had permanent happiness? Is it possible? How many times have I told you on the radio show over the years that the day you stop struggling and trying to achieve permanent happiness is the day you might have a chance at some contentment? Because that's what I learned in my life. So this started with me tweeting something the other day, which I'm going to read to you for a minute and see what happened, because I didn't expect this response from this one little tweet. I woke up one morning. This was before the last podcast on virus-killing foods, which people really, really like. So I go back to the tweet on February 4th. The fundamental myth of contemporary life. Here's what I wrote. The fundamental myth of contemporary life is that we can be eternally happy, leads people to despair and irrational behavior. Life is a struggle from birth to death, except the pain. That was the mood I was in, and I still believe it. I always have. So some of the people who responded were very, very intelligent, which is unusual for Twitter. A great writer who understood, propounded, and lived this truth was Dostoevsky, someone wrote. I'll soon reread The Brothers Karamazov. That was sent by Brian Gessinger. Lewisman wrote, said, one of my favorite things you ever said on the radio was, quote, we're put on this planet to suffer, and the day we admit it, we suffer less. Oh, I must have been in some mood. God. Oh, boy. Okay. Well, okay. See, over the years, I've always been thinking about it. Now, this is a very Catholic view, is that we're born to suffer. I was not born or raised as a Catholic, and I'm not a Catholic. I'm a long-suffering human being, not in the sense of being crippled, but I've been suffering with consciousness. I'm not one of those happy-go-lucky types, right? And so other people wrote other stuff, you know, no expectations means no disappointments. My psychology professor at CCNY taught us that exact lesson some 40-plus years ago, a proven truism and big help with reality throughout my life, says Tom Kelly. And I answered him, I said, now they teach that happiness can be found by hating America. Which I'm going to diverge here for a moment. In America today, a lot of the happiness consists of hating someone. So the ultra-progressives hate America. They hate white people. The racists hate white people. That's their happiness, is to vent their hate. Right? That's now substituted for happiness. And on the extreme right, hating communists, which they should do, by the way. Communism has destroyed hundreds of millions of people worldwide. So we go on, and then you think about the ads, the television ads in particular, social media. morons on social media, the so-called enablers? What do they call them? I don't know what they call them. I call them enablers, the fakers on social media that give the impression that everyone is happy all of the time and they live nonstop lives of bliss, right? Fake rides on private jets, yachts, all stupid, stupid people. And yet this is what social media pushes down the throats of the world over and over and over. We're being exploited from birth to death by the advertising industry. And most of us don't even know we're being exploited and that we don't know why we're miserable. Okay. So people understood this. And another one wrote, there is no struggle where there's no struggle, there's no progress. Agree with Frederick Douglass. And another one from biology, the struggle for survival is a moving force of evolution. Another one said, this is very much like Buddhist teaching. Another one said, people want instant gratification without putting in the hard work. Okay, so that's that. So then I started thinking, does anyone really want to hear a podcast about happiness? I'm sipping my coffee right now. And boy, does that feel good. I remember reading about happiness in when I was 18 years old and really struggling. The Sufferings of Young Werther. And I discovered Lin Yutang, which I tell you, one day I'm going to have to quote him. I'm not going to do it now. It'll diverge me into a two-hour podcast. The Importance of Happiness by Lin Yutang I discovered when I was 18, 19 years old. It kind of saved my mind from total despair in my teenage angst. Because he wrote that happiness does not consist in the flight of fancy of poets or philosophers. Happiness consists of the simple things in life, such as getting your hair cut every 2 weeks and watching your neighbor fall off the roof. I thought that was very funny. So I don't have a secret to your happiness. I don't have any secrets to your misery. But I have access to a lot of thoughts that I think you'll find interesting.
The Savage Nation. It's savage, uncut, unfiltered, and raw.
So we move away from that tweet to today's podcast, which is on happiness. And so I open up the New York Post, the tabloid, and there's an interesting article how Robert Maxwell rose from poverty and corrupted his daughter, Ghislaine. You may remember her, poor girl, Ghislaine Maxwell. And I didn't know anything about her. She was the enabler to Jeffrey Epstein. Apparently, she was the procurer of young girls for him. That's what she's being accused of. I don't know the truth of it. She hasn't been found guilty yet, has she? Sure, she's been found guilty by social media. She's been found guilty by the tabloids. But I don't know if she's guilty. I have no idea. But nevertheless, who is she? I don't know who Ghislaine Maxwell was. She's currently held in jail over allegations of procuring underage sex partners for Jeffrey Epstein. But I read that she was her father Robert Maxwell's favorite and followed in his crooked footsteps after his mysterious 1992 death, according to the headlines. Well, I want to read the book, but I didn't know who Robert Maxwell was. I knew he was a very wealthy publisher who died under suspicious circumstances, having fallen off his yacht somewhere in the Canary Islands under very suspicious circumstances. But I didn't know who Robert was. He was a self-made millionaire publisher, and baby Ghislaine was the ninth child born to Robert and his wife, Betty. Who is he, though? He was born in a shack in an unknown area of Czechoslovakia. And he made up his mind when he was young, after he served in the British military. I'd like to know more about what he did in the military, because it looks like he saw some great action in World War II. He made up his mind to have a large family. He had nine children to recreate the family of his birth after Adolf Hitler's forces slaughtered his children, the children of his birth, his brothers and sisters. All of them were killed by Hitler. His parents were killed by Hitler, and his grandfather was thrown in the ovens at Auschwitz. I would say that that motivated him. So then, at age 38, Maxwell is a rich man. He's living in a 53-room mansion in Oxford, England, 1,400 miles away from his own childhood in a two-room shack with no floors but soil, earth. Then tragedy strikes. 3 days after Ghislaine is born, her eldest brother, 15-year-old Michael, is crushed in a car accident that leaves him in comatose for the next 6 years. And that's what started the downfall of the family. So I'm not going to talk about Robert Maxwell's rise and death and Ghislaine. I think that that's an interesting and tragic story unto itself that people will look into to on their own. How a man rose from a desperately impoverished poor Jewish family in a village in Ukraine and became what he became when he goes to England. He adopts a Scottish name, Maxwell, when his name in this village was Hosh, H-O-C-H, okay? So he adopts a new name, Maxwell, gets into the British Army. Even though he wasn't a citizen, he enlisted, saw action in France and Germany, and left his family behind, who were all wiped out in the Holocaust. And so this created an open wound in him. He became fluent in Russian, English, French, very brilliant man. So the British Intelligence Service gives him a job running a propaganda operation in post-war Berlin. And he launches his publishing empire by buying up a huge catalog of German scientific research with the help of MI6, Britain's Foreign Intelligence Agency. And he becomes very, very wealthy with this publishing empire, which the MI6 wanted to help put out disinformation to Soviet contacts and pick up data on new technology. That's what spies did. And he establishes a modern scientific publishing company called Pergamon, very respectful at the time. But he starts to do things that were very shady. He borrows in the name of one of his businesses to make another appear more profitable. He strips assets out of the company, something that's done all the time now by a lot of the hedge fund scum. And we go on from there into the story of this man trying to achieve happiness. And he winds up floating off his yacht, named after his daughter, Lady Ghislaine, under suspicious circumstances. Was he killed because he was a spy? Was he killed because he screwed someone in business? Did he just fall off the ship drunk? Now, remember, when he was young, he was a good-looking, thin guy. I don't know if you know what Robert Maxwell looked like when he was older, but he looked like a really, really porcelain, you know, Nero-like, right? So I start thinking about, what are the seven cardinal sins, the seven deadly sins? Because this is tied into what is happiness in my mind. The seven deadly sins, according to Christian tradition, are you ready for this? Lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, and pride. In other words, everything that American media and social media promotes are the seven deadly sins. Everything that the vermin in the media push down your throats every day, everything that make you miserable is pushed by social media and the advertising industry. So you see these lowlifes in high places pushing it, images of them on airplanes they don't own, images of them. Why do I have to see another skank in a bikini splashing in the surf in Mexico? How many times can I see that trash? How many times can I look at white trash splashing in the surf in Malibu? I get angry thinking about what the tabloids do to people, pushing this on people like that's going to bring happiness when it's fake to begin with. So envy, gluttony, greed, or avarice, by the way, sloth, wrath, envy, and pride. I think all of us combine some of these in some ways in our daily lives at some point. We have to fight against them, don't we? Don't we have to fight every day against being gluttonous or lustful or greedy or laying in bed in the morning slothful, being angry, wrathful, being envious of someone, or having too much pride? Of course we do. That's the human condition. So we look at these, lust, a passion for especially sexual desires. Don't we have to control these things? No, not according to the social media, not according to the tabloids like the New York Post. Every day they show another girl in a skimpy bikini or another douche with his abs showing, some moron who winds up throwing himself out of a building when he can't make a nickel. Another with perfect abs who throws himself off a building in New York City or Los Angeles when he realizes he's a zero. Bible speaks about lust in 2 Timothy 2:22. Flee also youthful lusts, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace. Wouldn't that be beautiful if we were taught that today? Pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace. Self-control. Control your passions. Wouldn't that be nice? We're not, though. We're taught the opposite. We're taught to indulge all of this lustful feeling. Then we move on to gluttony, an excessive and ongoing eating of food or drink. Look at the ads on television for the poisonous dreck, garbage food, implanting in our minds the desire to eat garbage, right? And then selling you pills to lose weight or a machine to take the weight off. What about temperance? Where does that come from? Where's the temperance in our life? The desire to be healthy, making you fit to serve God and others. Are you kidding, Michael? Fit to serve God and others? Are you kidding? Next cardinal sin, greed, an excessive pursuit of material goods. Well, what does the Bible say about that? I don't want to bore you with it. But what cures greed? Well, for one, not reading the tabloids. Two, laughing and, if you want, mocking those they show us as happy when we know they're miserable junkies. The desire to help others, putting that above storing up treasure for yourself, may cure greed. What about sloth, an excessive laziness or the failure to act and utilize one's talents, right? What cures sloth? How about diligence or intense zeal? Okay, to place the interest of others or society above a life of ease and relaxation. That would cure sloth. I would like to stay in bed most mornings, and then I realize it's going to make me sick. I get out of bed, so you could say I'm doing it for ego. And then I think I have a job to do. People say to me, why are you still working, for example? You're an older guy. You made enough money to retire a long time ago. Why do you work? Why don't you just lay in bed? Why? I don't even have an answer to the question. Wrath. I have a weakness for wrath. It's a strong anger and hatred towards another person, right? The Bible teaches us in Romans 12:19, beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. I've had that in my own life. And everyone that I've wanted to hurt, everyone without exception has been hurt by God or fate or time. I've never seen anything like it. People who have tried to hurt me have wound up hurt themselves, not because of me. I'm not that egotistical, but I've seen it over and over again. Wrath, watch out for that one. Envy, oh, is that promoted by the tabloids? Every ad in every way tries to induce envy, every one of them. What is the cure for envy? Kindness. Every religion teaches us this. Kindness will cure envy by putting the desire to help others or helping even a pet above the need to supersede other people. That's such a Christian concept. You understand that? Pride. Oh my God, the media is all pride. Another idiotic actor, another idiotic actress, cavorting in the surf off Malibu with another idiot with abs. Why do they promote that? Because it sells stuff. The influencers on social media are nothing. They're empty skirts, all of them. So we know what pride is. It's an excessive view of oneself without regard for others. It's also an excessive view of oneself without having achieved anything. They have no humility. They think they're great just because they think they're great. So what cures that? Humility. It removes boastfulness. It removes one's ego. And believe me, time will do that to all of us. Getting older will do that to all of us. Just getting older, if you live long enough, eventually your ego comes to understand that no matter who you are or what you do, you're going to age. And it mellows you out. So again, I know this is very preachy, which is not what I intended to do here. I wanted to talk about happiness and sadness, and I'm going to do that in a moment on the Savage Nation podcast.
Home of borders, language, culture, the Savage Nation.
I spent a lot of time just now, perhaps too much time, talking about the seven deadly sins, the cardinal sins. when I really had intended to talk about is happiness possible. So I want to pick up where I left off. I talked about the seven cardinal sins according to the Christian view of the world, and Judaism is similar, Buddhism is similar in different ways. All religions teach the same thing in different ways. But what is the root of all of the cardinal sins? It's the desire for more and the human desire for excess. More, more, more. More, more, more. We want more. And all of our society, the entire world of our materialistic society, pushes us to want more, eat more, exercise more, be healthier. It's all greed and gluttony. When you think about it, exercise more, look better. It's greed and gluttony. Eat more, eat more, eat less, eat less. So that's more again, ego, more ego to look better. So, you know, okay, God, we're all struggling with this all the time. We try to be balanced. Now, I originally intended to do this podcast about joy and sorrow. And the first thing I wanted to mention on this podcast was one of my favorite philosophers that I remember from college. He was very, very big when I was in college. His name was Khalil Gibran, a Lebanese Muslim, by the way. And he wrote a book called The Prophet, published in 1923. I read him in the early, mid-60s, right? Early 60s. He was really popular when I was in college. Everybody was reading and quoting The Prophet. And we would quote it to each other. Look at the difference between the world then and the world now. Maybe I just had smart friends. I don't know. But everybody loved reading The Prophet. Girls, boys. And so he wrote things like on joy and sorrow. And he wrote, a woman said, speak to us of joy and sorrow. And he answered, your joy is your sorrow unmasked. And the selfsame well from which your laughter rises was often filled with your tears. Right? Think about that. The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. Is not the cup that holds your wine the very cup that was burned in the potter's oven? Is not the lute that soothes your spirit the very wood that was hollowed with knives? It's very, very touching to read this, by the way. And he goes on and says, some of you say joy is greater than sorrow, and others say, no, sorrow is the greater. But I say unto you, they are inseparable. Together they come, and when one sits alone with you at your board, remember that the other is asleep upon your bed. Boy, that's frightening, isn't it? Verily, you are suspended like scales between your sorrow and your joy. Only when you are empty are you at standstill and balanced. It's very touching. You got to understand, Khalil Gibran was a great poet. He died very young. He was a morphine addict, by the way. Why was he a morphine addict? Probably he felt so much pain that he had to take drugs in order to kill the pain. Am I justifying using drugs? You decide. Most of you use drugs anyway, one way or the other. Alcohol, vitamins, they're all drugs. But what do the world's great philosophers talk about when they try to talk about happiness? Where do they lead us? Why is there even philosophy in the world? Why? Because man has always sought answers to these questions since man could think. From the time he drew on a cave wall, he was trying to mark his time on Earth and try to understand what he's doing on this planet. Buddha wrote, there is no path to happiness. Happiness is the path. Sounds too much like Marin County to me. Most of them with the guru stuff. Bertrand Russell, one of my favorite philosophers, wrote, of all forms of caution, caution in love is perhaps the most fatal to true happiness. So he would say, throw yourself into love. I would disagree with him. I would say Russell was wrong. Nietzsche, the nihilist, said, happiness is the feeling that power increases, that resistance is being overcome. Now, Nietzsche, of course, was, I think, one of Hitler's favorite philosophers. Happiness is the feeling that power increases, that resistance is being overcome. In other words, dominating others gives you happiness. Socrates, back in 450 BC, wrote, the secret of happiness, you see, is not found in seeking more, but in developing the capacity to enjoy less. I like that. Plato lived in 4th century BC. What did my mentor write? The man who makes everything that leads to happiness depends upon himself and not upon other men, has adopted the very best plan for living happily. Wow, man who makes everything that leads to happiness depends upon himself I think he meant dependent upon himself and not upon other men, has adopted the very best plan for you. Okay, got it. So in other words, make yourself happy. Aristotle, another great Greek philosopher, wrote, happiness depends upon ourselves. I guess he took it from Plato, right? John Stuart Mill, born in 1806, wrote, I have learned to seek my happiness by limiting my desires rather than attempting to satisfy them. That's nice. What about Asians? Confucius lived in China around 500 BC. The more man meditates upon good thoughts, the better will be his world and the world at large. That's beautiful. How about reading good literature, listening to great music, instead of watching the slime on television? Seneca, born in Hispania in 4 BC, wrote, the greatest blessings of mankind are within us and within our reach. A wise man is content with his lot, whether it may be without wishing for what he has not. All right, got it. Lao Tzu, 600 BC, China. If you are depressed, you're living in the past. Wow. If you are depressed, you're living in the past. If you are anxious, you are living in the future. If you are at peace, you're living in the present. Very nice. Now, I know why I like Chinese food with the drawings on the wall. Can't go in there anymore. How about Henry David Thoreau, born in 1817 in Massachusetts? Thoreau was interesting. He wrote another one we read in college. Happiness is like a butterfly. The more you chase it, the more it will elude you. But if you turn your attention to other things, it will come and sit softly on your shoulder. That is so beautiful. That is so beautiful. So originally my podcast was going to be entitled Human Happiness, the Greatest Myth. Human Happiness, the Greatest Myth. Because it goes back to my tweet, the fundamental myth of contemporary life is that we can be eternally happy. It leads people to despair and irrational behavior. I wrote, life is a struggle from birth to death, accept the pain. Let's look at religion for a minute. I know everyone, oh, I don't want to hear about religion. Well, I think religion's deeply tied into happiness and sadness, one way or the other. And I personally think the reason our society has gone to hell is because God has been destroyed in America by the left, particularly by the ACLU. They're probably the most evil people on the planet. They're now running the country. They're the one who gave us Joe Biden to get very political. This is the most atheistic, anti-religious group in the history of America. Contrary to what the public relations of Joe Biden reading a Bible will show you, it's the most cynical thing. Again, the same people who show you the skanks in the water off Malibu are showing you Joe Biden in a sweater going to church. Religion. What about different religions? How do different religions see the world? And do different people in different religions have different levels of happiness? That's interesting. Who knows? So Pew Forum on Religion looks at it. I don't like the Pew group. I don't like these kind of studies. But just for the sake of discussion, the Journal of Religion and Health looked into the variability in happiness and life satisfaction amongst Buddhists, Hindus, Jews, Muslims, Christians, and other religious and non-religious people. Using data from the World Value Survey and a questionnaire, I don't know how this would work. And they tell you about the average happiness in a scale of, I have to laugh at this. The average happiness in a scale of 1 to 4 was higher amongst Protestants, followed by Buddhists, other religions, then Roman Catholics, then Jews, then Hindus, then Muslims, then the non-religious, and finally the Orthodox had the lowest happiness. Oh, thank God. I'm joking. No, not really. Really, that means I don't have to become super religious. So the average life satisfaction on a scale of 1 to 10 was higher amongst Roman Catholics, good for them, followed by Protestants, other religions, Buddhists, Jews, non-religious, Hindus, Muslims, and finally Orthodox had the lowest life satisfaction. I don't know whether this was meant, you know, the Pew is a super left-wing group. Maybe it's to attack religious people. So to me, that's neither here nor there. But I don't know. Does religion make you happy? Well, if you believe in another world, the next world where you're going to be eternally happy, it can make you happy in this world. Some people in some religions, in fact, will put a suicide bomb on their chest and kill babies and women and children and others because in the next world they're promised a certain number of virgins. How's that for a religion? So then there's another article that says, accepting unhappiness makes you happier. Feeling bad about feeling bad makes you feel worse. Right, okay, got it. In other words, accepting unhappiness makes you happier. In other words, that's life. If you have bad emotions or you're psychologically stressed, it'll make you worse if you think that you're not supposed to experience this. If you accept bleak feelings such as sadness, resentment, disappointment, what happens? It can make you worse. You can't let them run you. You can't let them run you, and you can't take a pill to get out of them, right? If you accept these emotions without embracing them or judging yourself too harshly for having these feelings, like saying, what's wrong with me? You'll be able to live with your stress. Say, this is life. I compare it to the tides. I'm a boater. And so I would say, if you look at the tides, and there are four tides every day, too low and too high, I would say that's the human being. And I've said it before on my radio show. If you want to be a flatliner and feel one emotion all day long, see a shrink and take a pill. But having said that, let's face it, health has a lot to do with it. Money has a lot to do with it. Friendships have a lot to do with it. Relationships and knowledge have a lot to do with happiness. Right? Health, money, friendships, relationships, and knowledge. And in this age of COVID, we've lost our friendships. We've lost our relationships. Many of us have lost our incomes. So no wonder we're very unhappy. Who do you blame for that? I can blame a lot of people for being idiots, for having done this to us. There's almost no science related to the treatment that we're seeing, the lockdowns, the social distancing, the masking. I'm sorry to tell you, this is not based on science. It's witchcraft. So what is happiness? Well, in plain English and in simple terms, if you live the life you want to live, if you work at a job you enjoy, if you have good relationships, if you spend your free time in the way you want, you're going to be happy. And when these things are taken away from you by these health officials, we become miserable, suicidal, in fact, because they've taken control of our lives. The worst of them all, and I don't even want to mention his name, Dr. Fauci. First one mask worked, then it didn't work. Then two masks worked, and they didn't work. Every day, another edict, close the restaurants, open the restaurants, outdoor dining, indoor dining. These people are evil. These are bureaucrats. So when they take away where you can live, where you can work, whether you can make a living, whether you can hang around with your friends, they're destroying your whole reason to live. Can money bring you happiness? Well, as my mother, God rest her soul, used to say, rich or poor, it's good to have money. It's not a bad joke. In other words, of course money makes life easier. Living in a hut with no floor but the soil beneath you, okay, would not be as pleasant as even living in a house with a nice warm bed. So what about money? What are you supposed to do with it? I don't know, giving it to charities and seeing it do good, helping animals that are dying or something or suffering, helping children that are suffering, makes you feel good. Using your own intelligence to solve problems makes you feel good. Using your strength to protect the weak would make you feel good, not to manipulate and dominate others. These are things that make you feel good. Well, thank you very much for listening to today's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed and learned something from it. And I want to remind you of something that I think is important for you to know. We have over 280 Savage Nation podcast episodes available to you absolutely free. I'll say that again. You can go back into this vast library of over 280 episodes and listen to any one of them or several of them at your leisure. So you never have to be without the Savage Nation. Thank you very much for listening.